Hey everyone, welcome to Entrepreneurship by Design with Dr. C. I'm your host, Dr. Caroline, and thank you so much for joining us today. Entrepreneurship looks different for everyone. How and why we start our business, challenges that occur, pivots we have to make, success we achieve, all while life is happening. That's why I love sharing these inspiring entrepreneurs with you and shed light that there's enough room for everyone to succeed and thrive, even if you're in the same industry. I am so honored today because I have Petra with me. Petra is a global trotting entrepreneur, mental health advocate, and castle passionista. She believes no dream is too big and you're never too old to go after the life you desire. Petra's family relocated from Germany to Canada when she was 13, which was a huge culture shock. During her 23 years in Canada, she watched her parents build their own business in security and telecommunications, which was her first personal experience with entrepreneurship. Out of high school, Petra completed a Bachelor's of Arts in International Relations and French, intending to move it to Europe to work for the UN. But life had its own ideas, and Petra joined the family business and worked with her parents for nearly 10 years. In 2015, Petra met her now husband, and they decided working online and being able to live anywhere sounded like a great future plan. They started with several different network marketing companies before launching their own online business in email marketing. Petra had always wanted to return to Germany, but again, life had its own ideas. In 2017, Petra and her husband ended up moving to the west coast of France with their cat, continuing their online business. Although Petra loved having her own business and experiencing culture in another country, in 2018 turned out to be a very tough year. Petra experienced several personal losses, which affected her greatly, and her first thought about the idea of creating a wellness platform. In 2019, The Journey was born, a comprehensive wellness platform with a blog and a podcast. Petra also started working on a coaching program for mental and physical well-being and continued her certifications in yoga, meditation, hypnosis, NLP, EFT, life coaching, and sound healing, to be able to support her clients in a variety of holistic ways. Petra currently works in France as a coach and yoga teacher while developing The Journey. She is also a grad student studying to eventually become a psychologist. So thank you so much for being here today, Petra.
Thank you so much, Dr. Caroline. It's a pleasure to be here. And I am so glad that we met and we got this opportunity to collaborate again together.
I am so honored to have you. And like you said, collaborating, it's just so important overall, but I'm just so grateful to have you here today to really share your journey and what has brought you here today. So we would love to hear a little bit of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you can probably tell by what you just read out, the journey has not been really straightforward, especially when it comes to entrepreneurship. And I have tried many different things that I didn't really like to finally arrive at something I'm really passionate about. And I feel that is the journey that started from the beginning when we first moved from Germany to Canada, which was a really big change. And I didn't speak any English. We didn't have any family there. I didn't know anyone there. And we moved from a very urban center in Munich, Germany, into a very small town onto a property with just trees and no neighbors. So that was the first sort of experience I had where it was a sink or swim situation. And it was either I was going to make the best of it, make friends and really thrive in that environment, or I was going to just be unhappy for the rest of my life. So I think this is sort of where the entrepreneurial spirit was born and tested a little bit, was during that time where I just had to make that work. And it did work. I went to high school there, finished high school. I eventually went on to university as well. It wasn't always smooth sailing, but I did get through all of that. And I did learn the lessons of, you know, moving to another culture, learning another language. I didn't know root beer, for example, was something I'd never heard of before. Halloween, Thanksgiving, those were all new things to us. And sometimes, you know, when I was in school, people would talk about things out of their childhood, certain comics or certain things they'd gone through. And I would not know what they're talking about because it wasn't part of how I grew up. So there was a lot of trying to combine the two lives that I had, the German culture that I grew up with and then the Canadian culture that I continue to grow up with. And I think being flexible and really becoming aware of all these differences and then making them part of something new was part of what shaped me to later on have my own business. And certainly during that journey, my parents were also a large part of that because my dad had his own business. When he moved to Canada, it was his dream to open up a security and telecommunications business. And so he installed alarm systems in the area and he installed telephone systems. And it was absolutely, if it had a wire, it was his passion. So that's what I witnessed when we first moved to Canada, was him, you know, picking out an office location and furniture, coming up with a logo, a name, registering the business in Canada, finding the employees, getting certified. It was a huge deal to come out of being an employee in Germany to now becoming the employer. And doing that in a country where you didn't really speak the language, you didn't know the laws, the rules, the tax laws, anything like that. So watching that as a teenager and watching my dad have his struggles with that was also, I think, something that shaped that journey to entrepreneurship. And to be honest, I had no intentions of ever having my own business when I first graduated from high school, because I saw that it was difficult. And I saw that in a small town, there was a lot of struggle surrounding money, time off, finding employees. All of those things were very difficult. And I said to myself, you'd be insane to start your own business. So you're going to go find a corporation to work for, have a cushy job, nice pension, and that'll be that. So that was actually the plan when I went to university, was I wanted to work for the UN or some, you know, non-governmental organization or something like that. Very international, something safe with a lot of job security. That's what I thought at the time. And that was when I graduated, that was what I wanted to do. But I soon learned that when you have a family business, like my parents did, there are going to be times that they will need help. And so after university, that's when it came to the fact that my parents did need help in their business. They needed a person to kind of help my dad run the business a little bit. My dad was out a lot on installations and things like that, so he didn't really have time to run the business. And so after university, I returned back to the town and I ended up working for my parents, and actually worked there a long time. I worked there almost 10 years. So kind of got stuck there, but I did learn a lot during that time about every aspect of the business. And because it was such a small family run business, you didn't have a choice but to wear a lot of different hats. So you were doing product orders, you were receiving, you were dealing with customers, you were setting appointments. I was learning about alarm systems because when people called with problems, I had to help them troubleshoot sometimes. I learned about payroll. You know, I went and became certified as a bookkeeper, and just so many different things, financials, how to do the reports, how to prep everything for the accountant, how to do year end. So I did see both sides of the business while I worked there, the sort of more technical and logistical aspect of it, and then also the personal and emotional side of it. If you're the owner, it's a very different perspective than if you're an employee who goes home at 5 o'clock and leaves all of those troubles at the business. And for the business owner, it doesn't really work that way. So I did get to see a lot of that, and I did get to experience a lot of that. And I kind of changed my mind, you know, during that time that I worked with my parents, because I thought I'd never wanted my own business. But I also saw that there was great freedom in having a business. If it runs well, there's a lot of freedom in it. And I did like the idea of incorporating the internet and, say, working in Canada or working in Europe or, you know, working even in a southern country and being able to be independent, make money at the same time, but travel also. So that was a really attractive option for me. And I think that's kind of what got the wheels turning in the back of my head when I first met my husband in 2015. That's sort of the track I was on. I'm like, how can I take all of this online? How can I work online? Mm-hmm. So yeah. I knew that my parents' business was probably not going to be where I would stay, which was sad because it's nice if you can sort of inherit your business to the next generation. But alarm systems and telephone systems was just not really my wheelhouse. So I figured, you know, if I had to do something, it would be something of my own, something different. And when I first met my husband, I still worked for my parents. He actually had a really good corporate job. He was an alarm technician at the time. So it was kind of funny because he worked in the same kind of business, except that he got sent all over Canada to install alarm systems. So in the beginning, we didn't really see each other much because he was being sent everywhere to do the installations. And again, we sat down and we said, it would be kind of nice if we could just work online and we can, you know, work from anywhere. We can spend time together. We can travel. And so that, again, that was something that we both sat down and said, yeah, that would be cool. Yeah. And with the advent of the internet becoming so prevalent and a lot of things moving online, I mean, this was even before the pandemic, because this was 2015, mm-hmm. We said, you know, there's a good chance that most places we want to go, there will be internet. There's a good chance that what we build, we could do online. It wasn't any longer the fact that, you know, nobody had internet or anything like that. It was becoming pretty popular. So we said, you know, this could be a good option. And the question was, how do we do that? So how do we move from these well-paid jobs that are fairly secure into all of a sudden working online and being responsible for, you know, creating our own existence and making our own money? And I think that was probably one of the most difficult things, because neither one of us really had any idea or any skill that where we sat down and said, oh yeah, we could totally make a business out of that. We both just looked at each other and we said, you know, I have no idea what we can do online, but let's just try a few different things and see if we come up with something. And so we eventually decided that since I had this job with my parents, I would keep my job and I would support my husband, who would try to create something online. So since we still lived with my parents, I actually had moved back into their house too, because they have a rather large house and sharing rent was, you know, it was a good option. And my parents didn't mind having me back in their basement, thankfully. So it was actually a really good time to try that out, because we had that safety net. If something, you know, didn't pan out or something did go wrong, you know, we had a roof over our heads and I was still working full time. And so it seemed like a very good and safe time to actually give that a shot. Yeah. And so I continued working in my normal job and my husband spent his days trying to come up with different things that could possibly turn into a business. And that's where we started off with a lot of the network marketing companies. Mm-hmm. You know, we did health products, shakes, I don't know, you name it, cosmetic products, essential oils, pretty much everything that's out there. And after a few years, we came to the conclusion that it was probably not the best way to go about it, because neither one of us really liked sales and we didn't really like creating, you know, big sales network and having to go out there and talk to people. Mm-hmm. So the first attempt was kind of a bit of a, we learned a lot. We learned a ton about technology. We learned a ton about networking and how things actually function on the internet, how people could work on the internet. We learned all of that, but decided it wasn't really quite the road that we should go down. Until my husband, he picked up a job on Upwork, which had something to do with email. I'm not even really sure exactly. I think they were looking for someone to send their emails. Mm-hmm. And my husband said, well, you know, I've sent emails before, so I think that this would be, I could do this. And instead of actually doing our own business, let's try a couple of these Upwork gigs and we'll see how it works out. And funny enough, this Upwork gig actually ended up being what launched the business. Yeah. Because when he started working on email, he realized that it was something he really enjoyed. So he learned so much working with these clients and actually we still work with them to this day. So it's been 7 years now, different things that we do now, but that's how it started off. And once he had worked with them for a few months, he said to me, you know, I think we could make a business out of this. And I think we could do sort of an email marketing agency and help people set up their email systems and help people send their emails and help them get good delivery and all of the technical aspects of sending emails. Mm-hmm. And since I don't have a clue about email, I said, yeah, that's fantastic. I can support you in sort of the administrative way. You know, if we do a business, I can do the bookkeeping. I can do the accounting part because that's kind of what I did for my parents anyways. Mm-hmm. I can do any social media things that we need. So, you know, we can kind of split that and I'll do one part and you'll do the other part.
Yeah.
And so that worked out actually really well. And we had a few clients that we did email for. We eventually branched out into also helping people with course creation, helping them create platforms where they could, you know, host the videos and kind of put it all together into these membership platforms. And mm-hmm. and then on top of that, help them manage their email so they could get more sales with their emails. They could get more of a client base. And we did help a few clients actually reach quite large monthly incomes through doing that and through supporting them. Mm-hmm. But it was really trading time for dollars. Mm-hmm. And we were working, you know, 14 hours a day mm-hmm. for very low income. And we kind of felt like we had just traded like one job for another job. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, we said, you know, we have to come up with something better where we get paid a little bit more and do a little bit less work so that it becomes more of where we actually feel valued for the time that we're investing in what we're getting paid.
Right.
And so that turned into kind of the business model that we still do now, where my husband works on a lot of the email things. We now have much bigger clients that we work with, and we have much bigger lists that we work with. And we do also negotiate percentages and things like that so that the work has become more valued and the work has become more satisfying. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of how that whole thing got started. So it's sort of just like a random Upwork thing that kicked off the business, which was great.
Yes, no, absolutely. And I appreciate you sharing that. And I love that you just really built upon all your skill sets, because as much as you were resisting going into business for yourself based off of like your own upbringing, it really alluded to the fact that you built the accounting skills, the bookkeeping, all these things that are so necessary in a business that sometimes get neglected or you have to outsource, but you were able to funnel that into your parents' business. And then now you're in your husband's business as well. But I love that it was an Upwork aspect or a project that really was the catalyst for you to help you and your husband grow this amazing business with email marketing. And a lot of people are like, I don't like emails or this is too much. What was that process of really starting to build upon? I know you kind of touched on it, but really building upon the email marketing and then getting all these other projects. How did you navigate that?
Mm. So what we realized about a year or so into as we were working, and what ended up happening is that the people that had put the gig on Upwork, we actually didn't know in the beginning how well connected they were. And so from that one job, we actually got referrals to other people that needed these kind of services through mm-hmm. them. So that's one of the things that happened. Yeah. But the thing we also realized after working with different clients is that a lot of clients think that email is just getting some sort of email provider. So, you know, you sign up for AWeber or you sign up for ActiveCampaign or MailChimp or whatever it is, mm-hmm. and you just write some emails and then you get some clients and then you hit send. And you do this a few times a week to make sure that they stay interested. And, mm-hmm. and that's how you do email.
Oh, yeah.
And what we started realizing is that that's really just the tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. There is so much other stuff that goes underneath that mm-hmm. most people don't know about. And that's why their email marketing never really takes off. So there's deliverability issues that go on. There are technical issues that go on. There's list hygiene that goes on. There's a ton of different things. And I'm not the technical person because I'm not really the person that works on this. So, but these are some of the basic things that even I noticed, even though that's really my husband's wheelhouse, is that most people, they don't really know what email marketing is.
Yeah.
And so when you start talking with them, they're like, oh, I just need someone just to send emails for me. That's what I want to hire you for. Mm-hmm. And then you sit down with them and you actually explain to them like, sending emails is sort of the last part. Like before that, all these things, they have to be set up, they have to be properly configured. Otherwise, your emails won't even reach the client. And then how do you even know that when you send an email, it's making you money? Right? Because that's in the end, that's what you'd like, right? The reason for sending emails, sure, some people send emails because they want to stay in touch with their audience. But really, people send emails because at some point they want to sell something and they want to actually make money with this. Mm-hmm. And so the second part to this that we started realizing is that people don't understand how to make money with email and how much money they're making with each email. They have no idea. Mm-hmm. And so there were a few touch points where we could really sit down with the client and say, hey, we've now worked on this for a long time. We've built up some experience and we have actually looked into these metrics and we can tell you how you can figure these things out and how you can improve them. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I think, what kicked off sort of a bit of a more niche business that my husband then started working on. And, you know, to keep in mind, like I didn't do any of the technical stuff. I did work with the clients. I do the billing. I do the support. I do all of the bookkeeping. That I don't actually do any of the technical email things. When I need email help, I just ask my husband. So yeah, but these are some of the common things that we talked about on a regular basis of things that people really needed. Mm-hmm. And you know, there is certain reports that you can pull in different email providers that will tell you how much money you made last month or how much money you made this month or how much money you made over the year. But what we really found lacking was that you couldn't, in most cases, even trace it down to a specific email. And if you did trace it down to how much money exactly each email made, you didn't really know why or how. Like, what did you do that did that? Can we replicate that or can we make it better? And so that's when my husband really started working sort of in detail with all of these softwares that are out there, with all of these platforms that are out there. And he started kind of putting together things that he was missing, things that he wanted, but that weren't in any of these softwares. Mm-hmm. And so in the end, he actually started sort of working on his own software. And, to fill these gaps and to be able to actually tell clients certain things about what they needed to know about their email metrics. And that's what he still does today. Mm-hmm. Is he works on all of those kind of things with different clients. And that was kind of what kicked off that whole, I think it had to be, we had to find something that was niche. Yeah. In order to be able to offer something very specific to clients and not just compete with all of the email service providers that are already out there, because you can just sign up for, you know, an account and then start using it. But really offer something niche that's on top of those kind of things that makes it more difficult to kind of say no to your services because no one else offers them. So that's kind of what ended up happening. And also the realization that there isn't really any training programs out there that we know of that train people in the specific things that my husband does. Mm-hmm. And so it's also very hard for someone to say, oh, I'll just take that on for my business and I'll do that. Because unless you're working with someone who has that experience, mm-hmm. there's hardly anywhere that you can take a course or program where you're taught those things. Yeah. And so my husband was very fortunate that he ended up sort of being mentored by some people that really knew a lot about email, and that's how he actually got his experience. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't anywhere that you can go to school for this or that you can learn that. So unless you're picking it up from somebody who can teach you that sort of privately, you're going to have a hard time finding those skills. And so those things really worked out in our favor, is trying to find some kind of niche product that then we could offer to clients and make that a very specific business.
Differentiation of what email marketing is, because in the past when I started my email campaigning, it was like ActiveCampaign or MailChimp, like all of those factors. But I love that you both really went down to the niche of it, of understanding this is what we have to offer. This is the service, but it's not just sending an email. There's like the iceberg, right? That picture of an iceberg where it's like, you only see the top of it, but you don't see everything that's underneath all of it. And I think that's exactly what you and your husband provide. And I love that you work together. So I'm curious, what has it been like working together as you've been growing this business?
You know, it's really funny because so we started this basically in my parents' basement, right? And so I had like my bed and then we had a desk with a computer on it. And that's really how we started off. And at some point my husband said, you know, I really need like a place to work because I'm trying to get more clients. I only have this laptop. I'm sitting on your bed. Like, do you think we can have some kind of office or something? So the first part of it, we were more apart because I was working for my parents. He was at home working. So we spent a lot more time apart. But in 2017, when we decided to move to France, we moved into the rental house here and we literally work in the same room all day long. So kind of 24/7 together, because once we stop working, we go to bed. So we really spend 24 hours a day together most days. Mm-hmm. And yet it feels like when we actually talk during the day, we've been in completely different worlds because he does such different things than from what I do. And so maybe you would think that it would be really, really hard to spend that much time together, but because we each have our own things, and now that I'm working on the journey, I'm much less involved in the email marketing. So we really do completely opposite things during the day. Mm-hmm. And so when we have a few moments and we talk, it's almost like we haven't seen each other all day because we've been, you know, in our minds running around doing client projects, this, that, the other thing. Mm-hmm. And then we sit down and I'm like, oh, I feel like I haven't seen you all day. It really kind of feels like that. And I think understanding that we were going to spend a lot of time together from the beginning, because mm-hmm. obviously we said, you know, if we have an online business, we're probably going to be together literally like 24/7. So mm-hmm. since we don't have jobs to go to, that was sort of the obvious conclusion. Right. And so we did talk about that a lot in the beginning because, mm-hmm. you know, there's the potential that you'll fight or you don't want to be in the same space or it's just too much. You kind of lose your mind if you spend too much time. Mm-hmm. And we sort of, we took a very realistic view to that right from mm-hmm. the beginning because we were very aware of that. And also because I spent 25 years watching my parents do the same thing, right? Because right. they also worked together in their business 24/7. Then they went home and spent their time together at home. So I grew up watching that the whole time. Mm-hmm. And I saw how they navigated it. And also some things that they didn't navigate so well, where I then said to my husband, you know, we need to watch out for this. Or we need to watch out for this. Mm-hmm. And so I think it has actually worked out really well. We have our tiffs, you know, we have our bad days and things kind of explode and we're like, yeah, we should go do some shopping or we should just go for a walk or something, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think especially through the pandemic, I've actually been so grateful that we get to spend our days together and we don't have to say bye in the morning and go off to our different jobs and we don't have to do any of that. And yet we always have new things to tell each other because our days are so different and we kind of spend them in our own little client worlds every day that still we haven't run out of things to talk about. So
it's a good place to be.
Yeah. So it's been really good.
It goes back to just being able to really communicate effectively. And I love that you were able to really see it from your parents' perspective of growing up and how you viewed that and how you shifted things or maybe kept certain things the same of what you liked and maybe didn't, but being able to have that modeled to you that it can work. And of course, everyone's going to have their tiffs and nobody is perfect, but being able to work through that. And I love that you have two different worlds that you're in, but coming together at the end of the day or at one point or another during the day. So that being said, I know you've had a lot of success with your clients in the email marketing, and I know now you have the journey as well. What has been maybe one or two success stories you could share with us?
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest success stories for PJB, which is the email marketing agency, mm-hmm. has been actually last year, so 2021. after working for months and months on sort of preparing the groundwork for starting a contract with a client, a very large US client, largest client that we have ever worked with, and really thinking in the preparation of that, the preparation of that was about 6 or 7 months. There was questions going back and forth, and also questions of, are we capable of servicing this client? Because it's such a huge client. Like, are we capable? Do we have the skills? Do we have the mindset? Do we have the tenacity, the resilience? Do we have the full package to be able to service this client? And then after all of this preparation, actually getting the contract, and it was kind of the moment of where we had sort of mixed feelings, because on the one hand we were like, oh my goodness, we are now starting to enter a different phase of this business because we're starting to service clients that are of a very large caliber, and at the same time having this imposter syndrome of saying, can we even pull this off? Like, can we even do this? Is this a good idea, or are we going to shoot ourselves in the foot by doing this, you know? And even though that was like one of the really biggest successes that we've had so far in PJB, it was also this bittersweet moment where this little bit of doubt's creeping in, a little bit of self-doubt, but we went for it anyways. So, you know, we just went for it, and it's worked out really great. But yeah, so that was for PJB. And I think for the journey, you know, it's been sort of an ongoing journey with the journey, because I realized that as I started moving out of the email marketing agency a little bit to follow my own business a bit more about the wellness platform and things like that, I did realize that I needed a lot more education and certifications if I wanted to offer certain services. And so kind of doing these certifications as I was going, you know, I certified as a yoga teacher, which was a big step because that took a really long time to finish that. And sort of appreciating these smaller successes that came along the way when I finished a certification. And also then getting accepted into university for the master's, which after spending 20 years not being in school, I wasn't really sure I could pull it off. So I did apply to several universities, and I did get some that declined because I didn't have the right degree, because I don't have a psychology degree, a bachelor's degree. And so that was, to me, a very personal success, maybe not a business success, but a very personal success to actually be able to start that journey and say, now I'm on my way to get some certification so that in a few years I can actually do what I'd like to do with the journey and have, you know, all of the permits and things that I would require in France to actually do all of that. And so even though I don't have monetary successes with the journey yet, because I'm still building it, these do feel like successes, because I feel like they were milestones sort of along the way of getting to the goal that I'd like to get to. So, yeah.
Absolutely. It's those steps, right, where we're having those milestones. They might seem small to others, but they're massive to us. And it's in that process, and it is the journey of getting there. And yeah. I love that you really allowed yourself to go back to school to get more education, to put yourself out there in that way. And as you've been building, was there any roadblocks of now putting more time and energy to going back to school, like while still working in the business, but going back to school, starting the journey? What has been maybe some of the obstacles you've overcome?
Yeah, I think the biggest obstacle was myself, to be honest. And this is a really common thing that we ran into it with our marketing agency also, is the mindset and yourself. Because at some point, you get tired. At some point, you doubt yourself. At some point, you have some experiences that are negative, you know, whether it be a bad client, or you lose some money, or even you might even lose your business, or something more dramatic, right? But usually in the entrepreneurial journey, there are points where you really start doubting why you started to do this in the first place. And so certainly during branching out from PJB into the journey, there have been a lot of points like that where I've sat down and I've said, you know, why did I even do this? I don't have the education. I have to come up with funds for this now. I have to come up with time for this now. I hardly sleep because my days are so full with trying to organize all these things. Like, why am I doing this to myself? Mm-hmm. And so I think myself was sort of the biggest roadblock that I've encountered in the last probably 18 months, you know, 2 years since even before I started the university, because of the doubts and because you get tired and because you start kind of questioning what you are doing. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, utilizing the things that I certified for, that I want to teach my clients, mm-hmm. to actually help myself were the biggest part in overcoming these roadblocks. So mm-hmm. to really say, now I take time for myself. Now I take time to do yoga. Now I take time to do meditation, mm-hmm. or I take time to do hypnosis because I'm not feeling great. I'm doubting myself. I need a bit of space to get my mind sorted out. I need some time just away from everything to get myself put back, to recharge my batteries. And it's great that I want to tell that to potential clients, but if I don't start with myself, mm-hmm. that's probably not going to be a good foundation. So this has been a really good learning curve over the last few years, is when I'm coming up against myself and when I'm coming up against sort of my limiting beliefs or limits that I've sort of inadvertently placed on myself, to really come back to the skills that I have acquired and to sit down and say, okay, well, how am I going to move past this now? What skills can I apply to put myself back together, to give myself more strength and to focus on where I want to be and to really kind of move through that roadblock? So, but yeah, I think it's been mostly me. that's been the roadblock.
That's the hardest one. You know, people talk about it here and there, but I think it's the biggest roadblock. We can be our own worst critic. We really can get in our way, but you really utilize these skill sets of other factors of yoga, being able to really lean into what you needed in that moment and filling your cup first and foremost, so you can pour out, so you can be leading by example for your clients because you've gone through it and people can see there is light at the end of the tunnel, but you have to do the work. And once you start doing the work, it starts to show up and you realize how important it is to be able to nourish that mind and body and soul. And I'm curious, what was the initial drive to start the journey for you? Your business, the journey.
Yeah.
I know it's bold, but.
Yeah. So actually it came out of, in 2018, I had a really tough year. And actually three of my family members ended up passing away in a really short order, one of them being my grandmother, who I was really close to. Mm-hmm. And then my best friend had a heart attack and he had died. He was not even 40 yet. And there was just a succession of personal losses. There was also a suicide of a very close friend, and one of my friends passed away from breast cancer. And at the end of 2018, I really felt like I couldn't go on mentally, that I couldn't continue our email marketing agency. I was so at the end of my energy, mm-hmm. and of my mind space. And I just felt like I couldn't push any further. I didn't even have the energy to really get out of bed. And this went on for, you know, because my grandma passed away in April. So this actually continued like through the whole of 2018. So every couple of months, something else happened. And so by the time we arrived in December, around Christmas time, I said to my husband, I'm like, you know, I spend a lot of time crying. I don't feel well. I feel like I can't continue this business. My head's not in it. I don't know what I can do, but I just don't feel like I can do anything anymore. Yeah. And that was really the time where I started thinking in the back of my head, I'm like, wait a minute, this kind of situation I've been through before. I've experienced depression before. I've experienced anxiety before. This actually has been part of the fabric of my life for a really long time. Mm-hmm. why don't I do something about it? So the thought to me was like, what can I do? You know, what could I create? What could I do to find a solution to feeling like this permanently? Not just, you know, putting a band-aid on it and smiling for 10 minutes and saying, oh yeah, everything's great, or saying some positive affirmations and not really believing them or anything like that. But really, what could I do in the long run that could help? And that could help maybe just not myself, but also other people that might be feeling the stress of life, the strain of life, things that happen, you know, that we struggle with on a daily basis, work, family, you know, there's many reasons why we end up in these situations. And sometimes our own personal resources are just really taxed to the limit. And we feel that we just can't cope at that time with everything that's going on. And so I thought to myself, you know, what could I do to come out of this? What could I do? And I had read a few books. They were sort of like happiness books, you know, that teach you like more positive approaches to life and things like that. And I thought that if I could create like a platform that sort of brought together a whole bunch of different ways to live a happy life. That was actually kind of my initial thought. A whole bunch of ways you could live a happy life, and put this all into a program or a platform or a course or something of that sort. Mm-hmm. What would that look like? And would that help people? Yeah. And so that's kind of the how over between Christmas and New Year of 2018 and 2019, that was what I was mulling around in my head. And as we moved into 2019, I also spoke a lot with my sister, and she had her own personal experiences also with different things that were going on. And we said, well, why don't we create something that will make people happy? Why don't we create like a program where we take all of the things that you have tried, all of the things that I have tried over the last 20 years, and we put them all together and we tell people what they can do to be happy. So in May 2019, we put our heads together and I kind of started creating an outline of what we could do and how we could put that together. I started going through the records that I had kept for my own mental health journey, the things that I had tried for depression, the things that I tried for anxiety, the things that helped me a lot when I'm really stressed out. Yeah. And we started documenting all of those different kind of things my sister did. I mean, my sister packed up and went to Thailand 1 year to go do her yoga teacher training, and then ended up in some spiritual thing in India that really helped her. And, you know, just these experiences over the past 20 years where we both kind of said, yeah, okay, these are all the things I've tried, and now you tell me all the things you've tried, and we're going to make a program out of this. So that's really how that happened, and really came out of that time where I just was not feeling very great. Mm-hmm. And felt the need to bring a solution out of that, to not just take it as like the end of everything, but actually as a beginning of something that could be really helpful, not just for myself, but for others. And through that journey of creating the journey, I started realizing that I needed more education, more certifications. And that's kind of how I ended up going through a lot of the alternative practitioner certifications for yoga and for hypnotherapy, for all those things, because I felt that if I wanted to offer a course that really would help people, I really need to know what I'm talking about, and I need to be able to offer these in a professional manner and with sort of a plan of how I would help people. And so that's how it came about that I started doing these certifications. And in 2020, in November, mm-hmm. I fell off a chair and I broke my foot. Oh. And as I was lying on the floor, I was kind of screaming bloody murder. And Jordan, of course, my husband, he jumped out of his chair and he said, oh, I just told you not to climb on that chair. And I'm like, yeah, well, it's too late now. You know, I think I hurt my foot. And we ended up going to the hospital, x-ray. Yeah, was broken, got a cast. And they told me, you know, six weeks for the cast. So that was just past Christmas. And I was like, oh, great, I'll have a cast for Christmas. That's going to be horrible. And I was really looking to that 6 week point where I'm like, okay, good, we're going to take this thing off. I'm going to get through this. We'll move on. I have yoga exams to do and this, that, and the other thing. I don't really have time for this right now. Mm-hmm. And the 6 week mark came they had done x-rays and everything, foot was healed good. They took the cast off and the foot kind of looked like an elephant. And so I was like, is this normal? Like, and they're, oh yeah, you know, when the cast first comes off, it's really swollen. It takes like 2-3 weeks, then you can drive again. You can just use crutches for now. It's all good. But you know, 2-3 weeks, we'll make an appointment and you'll see, it'll be good. So, you know, February came around, March came around, and I couldn't walk. And I was kind of thinking in the back of my head that something was really wrong. So I started, you know, doctor Googling it and all those things. And I finally went back to the hospital, and they sent me to a foot surgeon specialist to look at it and all of those kind of things. And they eventually determined that I had developed a complex regional pain syndrome. And the foot still looked like an elephant, and I still couldn't walk. And they finally ended up giving me a wheelchair because I couldn't get around the house. And we had to make all sorts of arrangements in the house because I couldn't go in the basement anymore. And, you know, my husband had to do laundry and all the things I couldn't do anymore. And that really, for my mental health, that was a point where I was this close to kind of giving up on the journey, because I said, you know, honestly, it's over now. I'm never going to be able to walk again. I'm sitting in a wheelchair. I can't get around. My foot is not healing. I don't know what I'm going to do. I've never been in this situation before. Mm-hmm. And that's when, you know, my husband, he just kind of looked at me and he said, well, isn't that why you created the journey in the first place? Yeah. And so, you know, I had to mull that over for a couple of days and kind of just, you know, really take a good hard look at myself. Mm-hmm. and say, okay, you need to stop this now. This is exactly why you created the journey. And so that ended up kicking off a few more certifications, more in the chronic pain area, and really in the mindset of what happens with chronic pain and how that can affect mental health, and really how it affects running your business when you have situations where you feel that they impact you to a very deep level, physically and emotionally, and how you decide to move through that. And how you can move that depending on your, you know, physical limitations or whatever's happening to you, but how you can find solutions for that. And so that was actually the second time where I really felt I was sort of pushed in the direction of, well, that's why you wanted to create this program. You wanted to help people get out of situations that were difficult, find their way again, find their path, find their strength, their energy, their courage. So you can't give up now. So yeah. So eventually I got out of the wheelchair and, you know, I got my head back together, and I just really took that as a very humble lesson. Mm-hmm. Again, of me being the roadblock and saying, oh, now I have to give up, to no, you can utilize all this on your journey. You can use this on your entrepreneurial journey. You can use this on your mindset journey, your mental health journey, your physical health journey. So yeah, so that was another little reminder that happened.
We need those reminders, unfortunately, sometimes. But I think too, going back to like what you've said throughout this whole interview, is just like, you are a problem solver. So when a situation occurs, even with your parents' business, being able to solve when you had no idea about alarm systems or the phone lines and you figured it out. And just even with the journey, when you were struggling, you literally were bedridden or like in a wheelchair, essentially, in order for you to really take a step back and take a breath for a minute and realize too what you had to offer and the ability to really help others now too. Because a lot of times I think we go through something because we have a purpose. There's an impact that we can make in any capacity, whether it's email marketing, alarms, or just our mental and overall well-being, of being able to understand too that our voice can have such an impact, and recognizing that we're not alone. And as hard as it is to go through certain things in our lives, it just gives permission for other people to understand that they can get through it too. We are the biggest roadblock a lot of the times, but when we're able to realize that we can push through it and break the ice and see that there's light at the end of the tunnel, that's a perfect example of what you went through in order to get to where you are now today, to help others. And I'm so glad you didn't give up on the journey. I'm sure a lot of other people too. But I love that you pulled the resources. I'm working with your sister on it too. Stays in the family.
Yeah.
Which is beautiful. And it just is reflection of just the relationships you've created and continue to create as well. And, you know, you've gone through so many things. I would love to know maybe one or two, maybe three tips that you could give entrepreneurs based off of your journey that you maybe wish you would have known or you have learned along the way.
Yeah, I think the biggest one is, and this sounds really cheesy because I think there's so many books that talk about this, but it's mindset, right? Mm-hmm. Watching my parents, I always thought it was tough, but then starting our own business, moving to a foreign country, starting it in France, all of those things, I think one of the things that you need to be really clear about is that you have really good personal boundaries and that you can work on your mindset, because there will be times where you doubt. There will be times when you say, I'm going to quit. I'm just going to go get a job now because I can't handle this anymore. And it's in those times that you really need to understand, like, why you started doing this in the first place. What's your why? What's driving you there? And how can you utilize that to really get your mindset back, get your energy back, focus back on what it is that you need to do? So that whole part of working on yourself and taking care of yourself, like, that is a really huge point that I think some people, they like the idea of business. They love getting into business. They have great ideas. They're really inspired. But when that first roadblock comes up, when that first challenge hits, a lot of them don't make it past that first hump, right? And so I think it's really important to keep that in mind, that you need to be prepared, and not in a negative way. You don't need to be afraid of that, but you need to be prepared to really put yourself back together, have your boundaries, know when you need to take care of yourself, take that step back and say, no, it's me time now. I need to recharge and refocus, because those times are going to come. And that way that you're prepared for it, you're ready for it. And then you can face those with a lot more success, I think. So that's one thing that I learned in that road. The other thing, especially with the pandemic, that I learned is that you need to be flexible. So I think before I already knew that, because when my dad tried to run his business in a small town, there are so many issues when you're trying to run a family business in a small town. And if you're not flexible, you're just going to go down. So it was already an issue before that I kind of had in the back of my mind, you know, you needed to pivot, whether that was advertising, products, pricing. There's always stuff that you needed to pivot on and be flexible with. But especially through the pandemic, I think sitting down and saying, you know, we were fortunate in the way that our business was already online. But there were many people that had brick and mortar businesses and they weren't able to pivot, and they actually lost everything that they had. And I do know a lot of those people personally, because they weren't able to be flexible. Mm-hmm. And I think we don't know what the world will really look like in 5, 10, 15 years. But if we take the kind of changes that have happened even just in the last 2 or 3 years, we can maybe say that the world is going to be a very different place than what it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And we need to be prepared to work in that environment, to live in that environment, and to thrive in that environment. And it might not be what we were expecting. It might not be what we've trained for. It might not be what we even want it to be. But if we're not flexible, the business is probably not going to survive. So having that flexibility of taking on new ideas, of, you know, the things that I've learned, there's a lot of points where I changed my mind on things because I got new information and I said, I'd never do that. But then something came along and I'm like, oh yeah, maybe I should do that. You know, to give yourself that permission to really stay flexible. You don't need to be right all the time. You don't need to know everything. But when the information comes along, that you're flexible enough to implement that and to move with it. And I think that advice, I got that also from other people that were in business and that were quite successful through the pandemic. And I think a lot of people, if they had actually taken that advice, their businesses would still be here now after the pandemic. So I think that's going to be a really important thing going forward, is that we continue to stay flexible. And it's tiring because sometimes you have to come up with new ideas all the time and you have to kind of ditch what you've been doing for the last 2 years, and you get frustrated and you get tired with that. Mm-hmm. But I think especially if you're going to have your own business, that's probably something, you know, to keep in mind. And I think the other thing is that you need to just keep going. That's, you know, it is, that goes with the mindset too, but really you need to keep going. I mean, if it is what you want, right? That is the thing that you need to keep deciding, because if you're throwing away your physical health and your mental health and you're not happy with it, then there's no point in having your business and continuing with it. It needs to be something where you find some personal satisfaction in it, right? Mm-hmm. But that I never really understood that until I think we got to the pandemic, where it's like, yeah, you need to keep going. You need to just find that motivation in yourself. You need to drive yourself, and you need to keep pushing. And if this is what you want to pursue, and there's lots of reasons to not. So I think more reasons, like for a lot of entrepreneurs, there's more reasons not to do it than to do it. But yeah, if it's your passion and you know that this is the path that you want to go, then you need to just keep going for it, and you need to be resourceful and find those solutions to go after it. And that's goes with the flexibility, it goes with the mindset, it kind of all goes together, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think those are, and I wish I had known all of those things before. I mean, I did kind of subconsciously observe them when I was observing my parents, but the world has changed so much even since they started their business that a lot of the things that apply to them, it doesn't even apply to my husband's and my business anymore. So yeah, that's part of the flexibility and the change, right? But yeah, I wish people would have just been really honest about what it meant to run a business, because there can be awesome times and you can be so successful and it's great. But then there's this other side that a lot of people don't talk about, where it's physically very tough. A lot of people spend so much time working, they forget to take care of themselves. And, mm-hmm. you know, mentally so tough that some days you don't even know how you're going to go on. Financially, mm-hmm. if you put everything into your business and that is the one thing you're doing, that can be really stressful. If you don't know if it's going to work or not, you could lose everything. And I wish people would have just been a lot more honest about all of those things, you know, and really talked about how that affects people, because then I could have really prepared myself for all of those things. So mm-hmm. yeah, that kind of, nobody likes to talk about the negative things, but it's not to say that you shouldn't do it, but it just gives you sort of the more open eyes perspective of when you get into something, what are the things that we should expect and what should we prepare for?
You're right. People don't talk about it. So I'm glad you did bring it up. I'm glad we are talking about it and being able to understand too, when we are able to realize it's not just all rainbows and sunshine and you're making money and successful. There's a lot of work behind the scenes, and there are days that you're like, how is this going to work? And somehow, some way it does, but it's persevering. Just like you said too, it's the mindset, it's flexibility, and just not giving up. So Petra, I've been so enjoying this conversation. I'd love to jump into the rapid fire questions if you're ready for them.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. The first question is, who is your hero?
Yeah, you know, I had to think about that because I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. But I have to say that that's my husband, because the things that we've been through the last 3 years and the way that he has continued to support me, encourage me, it's been on a little bit different level than my parents, who obviously have been there for me my whole life. But this very business that we've built, the very existence, if we, you know, did this in a foreign country, just the two of us, it's a different kind of level of reliance that you have on someone when that happens. And especially also when I broke my foot, he literally had to take care of me 24/7 because I couldn't really go shopping. I couldn't go downstairs, upstairs. So he's my absolute hero for everything that he has done, everything that he continues to do, and in the way that he makes things possible. Because without him running the email agency right now and saying, hey, you can go to school and I will support you right now to do that, it wouldn't even be possible. So yeah, my hero.
Incredible man.
Yeah.
And what motivates you to work smarter?
You know, I think, and I hope my parents don't watch this interview, but I think it's what my parents have been through, because I did see a lot of things that scared me a little bit, especially, you know, my father having some health issues because of the job issues and things like that that came from owning a business. And that really scared me into actually saying, you know, there has to be a different way that we can build a business. There has to be a smarter, a healthier way that we can build a business, but not really kill ourselves in the process. Mm-hmm. And so, unfortunately, this motivation comes from sort of a negative place, but it also means that we have the opportunity to do things differently for our business. So yeah, that's been the big thing.
That makes sense. And if you were a superhero, what would be your power or powers?
It has to be healing, you know, because it's such a big thing. And realizing what not having health does to you mentally, physically, and what it can really change your life in so many ways. I think healing has to be the one power that if I could heal people, that's what I would want to do, you know, give them happiness, health, and really, you know, send them on their way to have a great life.
That's beautiful. And so if you were to share a meal with any four individuals, living or dead, who would they be?
Yes, I thought about that. So really, I would love to, so there's one living person and three people that have passed away. Mm-hmm. So the living person would be Gordon Ramsay, who's like my absolute favorite chef. And then I would want to sit down with my grandma who passed away, because I feel like we have not had enough time. And I want to tell her about all the things that we're doing now. So she's one person. My best friend who passed away from a heart attack, because again, I feel like we moved to France and he passed away and we didn't have time to even share any of these amazing things that are happening now, or have him come visit here and share those things together. So he would be the third person. And the last person would be my great aunt Rosalie, who also passed away, because she was such an incredible woman. And she was like in her 90s and she was still water skiing and like doing all these crazy things. And I think that part of that sort of rubbed off on like my mentality, where it's like, women can do anything and anyone of any age can do anything. So if I got all these people together and Gordon Ramsay would cook us like a really amazing meal, you know, that would sort of be a really unforgettable evening, I think.
Oh, that'd be amazing. And what is the most daring thing you've ever done?
Yeah, I think it was meeting a stranger online, tasking him with finding a rental house in France, trusting that when he said it was good, packing up within 10 days and leaving Canada. So I think that was like probably one of the craziest things my husband and I did together. I still can't really believe that we pulled that off, but yeah, I think that was ranks up there on the craziness. And yeah, we packed up the entire household. I booked the plane tickets and we went on the word of someone that we met online who said he would help us find a house. And when we got to France, we didn't even really know if the house was there. I mean, we had sent the deposit and everything, but you know, it's the internet, so you don't really know. And so, yeah, we were really hoping that everything was going to work out.
I'm so glad it did.
Yeah,
that is very daring, though. So what is the phone app that you use the most?
Oh, Amazon. Yeah, hands down. I don't really have time to do shopping and things like that, because with everything that's going on with the businesses and that. And so Amazon for me is kind of this lifesaver, where it's like, oh, we're out of shower gel. Yeah, great. I can order that. Or, oh, the cat has no food. Yes. Okay. I can order all of that. Mm-hmm. And so it makes my life really easy. And even though it's not like a really kind of profound app, like, you know, it's not a meditation app or anything like that, it does help me organize my days and it does help me free up some time so I can practice self-care, because I don't have to be running around in the car and picking all these things up from different places. So yeah, hands down, I think like if you ask the phone gives me like statistics on which app I use the most, I think I do spend the most time on Amazon.
It makes sense. Makes life easier. And yeah, what is the last book that you've read or listened to?
So I don't actually get to do a lot of fun reading at the moment because school has like all these textbooks, right? So the last book that I started reading was The Paradox of Passion and Psychotherapy. And it's by Professor Emmy van Deurzen, who, you know, teaches existential psychology. So I'm not all the way through it yet, but it kind of goes to show that a lot of my reading now is more for professional reasons and for sort of the fun, enjoyable reasons. But I still do enjoy learning, and I enjoy learning about different topics. So it's been very interesting.
I get it. School will do that. There's so many books you have to read for psychology. I can definitely relate to that. What is your favorite family recipe, whether it's traditional or you just love making it together?
So being German, I'm like a very meat and potato kind of person. And like when we were younger, really like Sunday was like Sunday roast day. And there was like a big sort of family meal. And there was always like a meat. So like some type of roast or meat type recipe. Mm-hmm. And so all of my family recipes that I know about, they all involve some kind of roast or something like that. Mm-hmm. And one side of my family is Polish, and so my great aunts, they used to cook like there was a small army coming or something, right? So like, you know, where somebody would make like a little cake, my great aunts, they would make like sheets, like giant sheets of like cake and everything. And it was always like, who's supposed to eat all this? And they're like, oh, well, you know, people are here, they're hungry, so we're just gonna cook for everybody. And so going through this food culture of learning that food is how you express your love to the people that you love, because you take the time to think of this meal, you take the time to buy the ingredients, you take, and my great aunts, they took hours and hours in cooking, right? So all of our family recipes are slow cook recipes. They're not done in 10 minutes. They're like a roast you put in for a really long time. There are things you simmer for like 3-4 hours. So like, that's kind of what I learned with the meals, is that this is a way of showing love. Mm-hmm. And so my favorite recipe, it's rouladen, which is like these pieces of beef, and mm-hmm. they're like really thin. And then you put, you know, different people make it differently, but you put like a bit of mustard on it. And then you can put in like cut little pickles, and you put in some bacon pieces, and sometimes a mixture of like some onions and carrots and things like that. But it depends, everybody makes them a bit different. And then you roll it all up, and then you have these like little meat packets. And then you fry them, and then you put them in the sauce, and you literally just let them cook forever until they're really tender. So, and then when you take the little package apart, like you take the string off it, mm-hmm. it's so tender, and you have like all these crazy flavors, like a little bit of the acidity from the pickles, and then the onions are kind of sweet, and then you have to have dumplings with it. Dumplings are my thing, so yeah, dumpling and sauce and rouladen, that's like my favorite thing.
What a combo.
Yeah, it's just one of those, like if you're not feeling good, like you have that mm-hmm. meal, and like at the end of it you're just smiling and you're like, yeah, that did it. So
your passion.
Yeah.
So if you had to describe yourself as an animal, what animal would you be?
Cat. Yeah. Like, yeah, it was the one and only very obvious answer. I love cats. And honestly, I think a lot of people thought I would probably end up being a crazy cat lady because I was always so busy with like work and business and all mm-hmm. of that. They thought I would never get married. And so I do have a husband now, but I still love cats, and I would love to have more cats. But I would not just like to be any cat. I would like to be my cat, because my cat gets, you know, treated. He gets anything he wants, and he gets the best food, and he wants a chair, we buy him a chair. He wants a bed, we buy him a bed. Like, it's, you know, I'd like to be my cat.
Yeah. Royal treatment.
Yeah.
And what's something an outsider wouldn't know about your industry?
Yeah, so I think it's, like I said, like for the email marketing agents, maybe in particular, it's the depth of sort of the niche knowledge that is sometimes required mm-hmm. in seemingly very basic tasks like email, sending email, which sounds like such a simple thing, but it's actually a very intricate process. And that's why people who do this job actually get paid a lot of money. And I think this could be misunderstood, not just in our industry, but in a lot of industries, because people don't really see all the work and training and everything that often goes into when you're providing a service. But then they kind of wonder, like, why is the price so high? And it's like, well, these are all the things that we can't really explain them, but you will see, because you will make money with it after when we help you with it. And so I think it's like almost like this iceberg thing where the client sort of sees the top piece of it.
Right.
And then you have to really justify why you're charging what you're charging. But it's because there is all of the specialized knowledge that goes into it that many people, I think, aren't aware of. And I mean, email, like any other technical thing, I mean, there's many other things, people who program servers or, you know, do very technical coding and things like that. They probably all kind of feel the same way, that there is a very specialized knowledge that they have to acquire to be able to provide a service or a skill. And I think until you do it, you might not be aware exactly of how complicated things are.
Because you don't know what you don't know. And people might know, but I know I didn't know all the things that go into email marketing on such a high level and everything that goes with it. So I so appreciate what you and your husband do and are able to really get it out there and helping people return on investment, essentially. But thank you so much, Petra, for being on today. Where can people find you, use your services? We're going to link everything below, but if you could let us know too.
Yeah, so the easiest way to find everything is on a sort of one link that I created that has all of the other information in it. And it's bio.thejourney, and that's JORNI.com. And that sort of includes all of the things that we offer on my side. So it doesn't include the email marketing services, because we're not actively actually working with new clients at the moment, but it does include all of the journey things that I'm doing. So we have, you know, the wellness platform, the podcast, the blog, also the services that I personally offer. So yoga, meditation, hypnotherapy, all of those kind of things. And it also does have some free resources on it. So if people wanted to try out a hypnosis track that I created or a meditation track, I also have a free video series of 5 videos that help you kind of get your energy back and realign yourself. So all of those things I offer as free resources. I have an ebook as well. And you can find all of those things in that link.
Thank you so much. Thanks for sharing all those resources. It's amazing. Yeah. Definitely grab those. They'll be linked below. So just click on the link and you will get to see all of that. But Petra, thank you so much for really coming on, sharing your energy, your light, your beautiful soul with us today, and just everything that you are doing in this world. I know I appreciate it. I'm sure everyone listening does as well. But thank you again for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity. And I am excited to see what else comes up, and maybe we can collaborate again.
Absolutely. That's a must. Well, thank you so much. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment below. What was the biggest takeaway from Petra today? I'm sure she would love to see that comment as well. And we will see you on the next video.